You guys doing all right today? Okay, good. It's very heavily weighted to one side today. I'm not sure why that is, but hey, I'm glad you guys are all, I know everybody's looking around now, it's okay. Hey, I'm glad you guys are here. We're going to be in Psalm chapter 67 today. Psalm 67, if you want to turn there, find it on your device. Man, it's a great day to be new, so I want to welcome you, especially if this is your first time, or if you've just been coming around with us. Thank you for being here. We're in a series today called Multiply. We're just starting it, so everybody's on the same page, and we're going to learn about what it means to be a healthy, multiplying church on mission together here in Roanoke. And multiplication is where Jesus followers make more Jesus followers, who then make more Jesus followers and make more Jesus followers. It goes on. And that's what Jesus commanded us to do in the Great Commission. You guys might remember this if you've been in church at all. Matthew 28, after his resurrection, when he's with his disciples, the last thing that he says to them was to go make more disciples of all nations, baptizing them and teaching them everything that he'd taught them. And the way that we contextualize that here at our church, the way that we contextualize the Great Commission, is through a strategy that we have called make, shape, and multiply. We want to make new disciples, share the gospel with them, engage non-believers with the gospel to make new disciples. We want to shape disciples into the image of Jesus, and then we want to multiply disciples, where we send out leaders to go and make more disciples. But we believe that to do that effectively, we got to have a specific detailed plan for our church for this time in this place. So as we continue to contextualize that further, our directional elder team has laid out this vision for our leaders, and now I'm giving it to you guys, that we believe that God has given us three ministry lanes he wants us to run in this coming year. And I know we're at the end of the year almost. I mean, can you believe it, right? And so I want to project out a little bit for 2023 with you guys today and give you these three lanes that you have on this handout here that you should have had on your seat on your way in. And these give us the ministry lanes on the back of this, if you want to look at that handout in your seat there. And we believe that these are going to jumpstart multiplication in our church in 2023. So let me just quickly walk you through these three little ministry lanes that we have. And the first is that we want to fuel the next generation. That's the first thing that we see here. Because we know that our kids and our students are really the most sendable people in our church. Because we're raising them up in the faith. We want to disciple them to follow Jesus. And then we want to teach them to go and make more disciples as they go out, wherever they go. Because guess what? They will go, right? I mean, students and kids, they should go somewhere. They should be raised in the household of faith. And then they're going to get sent out to go to college, to go to jobs, to go somewhere else across the world, whatever it looks like. And we want to make sure that when they go, wherever it is, that they go on mission. So we need to step up our resources for our kids and students' ministries. We want to make sure that we make the space that they're in right now better, that at least it's not a hindrance for them in the mission here. And maybe even consider more staff this year if we have the resources and funding for that to fuel that ministry further. So fueling the next generation for us is very important. That's the first vision point, the first ministry lane that I have for you there. The second one is to create a sending pipeline. And we want to do that through a ministry residency for graduates and young professionals here. It's generally going to be a two-year program that gives somebody, typically in their 20s probably, an opportunity to explore ministry in a meaningful way here, to earn a totally free master's degree through an accredited seminary. That's pretty awesome because of the connections that we have with Mercy Hill and the seminary that we came from, Southeastern, and other avenues there. And again, there's almost no better people group to send out of a church than young professionals and graduates, because they're going to go somewhere anyway for a job. Why not send them with the mission in mind? And so what we want to do is, whether they go back into the workforce or whether they go into ministry, we want to make them sendable people so that wherever they go, it's with mission-driven purpose to advance God's kingdom in the world. And then finally, the third ministry lane we have here is we want to move to a strategic new location. I know, everybody's like, thank you, God, right? I mean, need I say more when you just look around the room and the chairs that you're sitting in right now, okay? Now, I mean, this has been a great tool that we've used, and that's, of course, buildings are tools here, but we want to be a culture-shaping church, and meeting here in this location has helped us get our feet on the ground because it has been cheap, but man, for our kids downstairs especially, but then also just the overall feel of the building, I mean, some people have described it as dirty and dingy, okay? That's other people's words, not mine necessarily. But maybe most importantly, the actual location in the city itself. It's not super accessible, right? And so what we want to do is be strategic in a more long-term place so that we continue growing, of course, but then reaching professionals in our city in a strategic way. And so we're a growing church here. All of these things are what we want to pursue this year in 2023. And it's great that we're growing. Listen, I'm not just pulling that out of nowhere. We've grown by 50% since this time last year. That's awesome, right? But we have yet to see multiplication really become a part of our culture. And I'm not saying that to be discouraging. I'm not frustrated by that, but we just need to recognize where we are. And we're only a year and a half old. But if we don't change that culture of multiplication, where disciples are making disciples who make disciples, then we're not going to be a biblically faithful church as we move forward. And we're certainly not going to be a culturally impactful church. And I really believe all three of these ministry lanes will help us get there. You guys just got darker for some reason. I don't know what happened there. The lights are flickering. Okay. All right. Okay. Good. 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 Oh, man. We definitely need to make sure we get to a strategic location. Okay. So let's keep that in mind as we move forward. But listen, I want to make sure that these three ministry lanes, you guys understand how they're going to help us get to multiplication together. You've got to be doing it on your own personally, but then we can also do it together, and we believe that these three ministry lanes will help us get there. I don't think any of them are way out there for us as a church as far as what's actually attainable, but the key will be that we all catch that vision together, that we all are moving and running in the same direction together. And it starts with what we learned today in Psalm 67. That's why we're going to be there, because if we're going to become a multiplying church, we have to really believe what the psalmist teaches us here and declares about God's blessings in this particular psalm. He gives us things, he blesses us with things to leverage for his glory in our city and in the world. And that's our main point today. If you're taking notes and you want to write that down, I want you to walk away challenged with this: leverage God's blessings to give God glory. That's the point here. We have to learn to leverage his blessings to us for his glory, back to him. That's what a Jesus follower does, and that's multiplication. A Jesus follower is a multiplier. It's somebody who's been ultimately blessed by God in the gospel and with resources, and who's now going to give that back to God for his glory, for the sake of his mission in the world. And that's what our church is here to do together in Roanoke. We want to be a factory producing disciples who make disciples, as opposed to a country club. And I say this all the time: we don't want country club Christianity here that just gathers a bunch of people that look the same, act the same, and like the same things. I mean, a factory brings resources in to send them back out in a more usable way. A country club brings resources in, but it keeps resources in, right? So that it can keep everybody else out. That's not what we want to do here. We don't want to just build ourselves up. We want to build things up and then send them back out. So today we'll see in Psalm 67 how that works with God's blessings in our life. He blesses us, and then we leverage that blessing to give him glory throughout the city and throughout the world. So let's start here in Psalm 67. We're just going to go through the whole thing here, walk through it together, starting in verse 1. This is what it says: "For the choir director with stringed instruments, a psalm, a song." And by the way, that's the intro, but intros in the Psalms are scripture. Like they're not just somebody, you know, going back into it and writing that in. This is from whoever wrote the psalm. But then verse 1, "May God be gracious to us and bless us. May he make his face shine upon us, Selah." Now, since there's a pause there, we ought to pause and think about this for a second. That's what Selah means. Let's pause and consider. It's a throwback to a passage in Numbers chapter 6 where God instructs the priests of Israel to bless his people in the same way. He said, "May the Lord bless you and protect you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you." That's from Numbers chapter 6. That's the blessing for the priest on God's people. So this is a prayer asking for God's blessing. May God be gracious to bless us. Why? With what? With his face shining upon us, which is a metaphor for his presence in our lives. May God be present with us. And when his presence is there, necessarily his glory will be there. Man, this is a blessing for his glory. May his glory be in our lives. It's like when Moses saw just a hint of God's glory up on Mount Sinai, and he came down and his face was glowing with God's glory. Or when Jesus went up on the mountain of transfiguration and he came back down glowing with God's glory. Man, we ought to ask God to bless us in that. So we just get a taste of that. Just a little taste of that glory in the same way. You can write this down. If you're taking notes, ask God to bless us with his presence. That's what this psalm is telling us to do. Ask God to bless us with that presence and his glory so we can see his glory in our lives. I know some Christians in some circles frown upon that a little bit. They say, hey, you shouldn't just ask things, do things, and then ask God to bless them. You can't just ask God to bless you in whatever you're doing. And I get the sentiment, right? Like James chapter 4 mentions this. It says, you don't want to make plans on your own, out of your own wisdom, for your own glory, right? You don't want to ask God to bless what is for your own glory. That's not what you want to do, and I get that. And I think the mentality, though, might fall into what he teaches in James chapter 4, verse 3, which is, when you ask, you don't receive. Why? Because you have wrong motives. So if your motives are wrong, of course, yeah, God's not going to bless that. Of course. Our motives are wrong every once in a while, aren't they? Maybe most of the time, you know. We can ask all we want, and we won't receive because our hearts are in the wrong place. But listen, aren't Christians also supposed to be cultivating a heart that's after God's own heart? Right? Aren't our desires supposed to be conforming to His desires over time? So insofar as we're starting to have the heart and mind of Christ, we ought to ask God for His blessing and presence with us to give us everything that we need and maybe even want, because what we want is starting to become what Christ wants in our lives. It's starting to become what God wants for us and wants to do through us, which should be for all the peoples to praise Him across the earth. That's what verse 2 says. We want to be blessed. We're praying for blessing, verse 2, so that your way may be known on earth, your salvation among the nations. Let the peoples praise you, God. Let all the peoples praise you. Let the nations rejoice and shout for joy, for you judge the peoples with fairness and lead the nations on earth. Selah. So there's another pause. Let's stop and talk about this. The blessing that we're asking for is so that the salvation of God would come to the nations. That's why we're being blessed. That's why we're praying for the blessing. In other words, the psalmist is asking God to reveal Himself to His people so that He will bless them with all the things that they need, all the glory, His face shining upon them, so that all of the rest of the peoples everywhere across the face of the earth will be saved and rejoice in the same way, and that they'll get to see God's glory also. Sounds a lot like what we learned in Abraham's story, if you remember that from the summer with Genesis, right? He was blessed to be what to others? A blessing, right? Blessed to be a blessing. In other words, the reason that God blessed him was to bless the nations. It wasn't just for the sake of Abraham. It was for the world. That's the story of Israel. God blessed them continually, even though they didn't deserve it. Why? So that the nations would see His glory through them. So you can write it down this way if you're taking notes. God doesn't bless us except to bless others. I know that sounds a little like extreme maybe, but it's true. That's God's mission in the world. He doesn't just bless us to fill up our little spiritual tank so that we can dip into it every once in a while when we're in need of encouragement or in times of trouble or when we're feeling low and we need peace in our lives, right? That's not why He blesses us. That's not it. He blesses us so that it acts as fuel in our tank, so that we can burn it in the race toward reaching other people in the world. And we might ask, yeah, but doesn't He care about us? That seems a little like, I mean, doesn't He care? Yes, He does care about you, but He cares about everybody else too. It's not about you. It's about His bride, the church. He's bringing a people together, not just a person. I think we misunderstand that sometimes as Christians. Yeah, He loves us, but He loves everybody else too. He saved somebody who shared the gospel with you. Why wouldn't He do that through you now? Of course He would. He can't stop with us. God's blessings can't be stopped with us. They can't be hoarded. They always have to be shared with others or they'll rot. Maybe you guys remember the story of manna raining down from heaven when the people of Israel come out of Egypt and they are miraculously provided for by God. You know, their wilderness wasn't like ours. You go out into the mountains here, you can probably provide for yourself. You find streams, you find fish, you find berries and all this kind of stuff. I've been watching Alone too much, maybe. But in their wilderness, it was a desert, right? And there were over 1 million people wandering through this desert with very few resources. So God, He miraculously provided for His people. He blessed them with manna, which was something like coriander seed, don't ask me what that is. I have no idea what that is. Just the commentary said it, so I have no idea. But apparently they gathered this every single day so they could make food, make cakes, make other things out of it. But there was this rule for gathering the manna, if you recall. They would only gather enough to feed their household for the day. They could do it double on Friday, the day before the Sabbath, because they weren't going to gather on the Sabbath. That's their Saturday was their Sabbath. But that's the only day they could gather more than they needed. And it was for the following day so that they wouldn't have to work. Every other day, they had to gather what they needed and no more, because what would happen to it if they gathered more than they needed? It would rot. It would spoil. It would go bad. That's the rule here. The blessing was no good if they tried to hoard up more and keep it for themselves. Listen, you can write this down. We can't keep God's blessings for ourselves. We can't do it. It'll rot. It'll rot our soul. It'll rot our lives. He'll bless us, and then it won't be a blessing in the end. It'll be a curse because we've kept it. See, he blesses us so that we will in turn then bless others. That's the Christian life. I just want to point out one more thing here. It's kind of dangerous if you pray this prayer and ask God for his presence and his blessing and his glory to shine upon you. Because what you're necessarily asking for is the responsibility now to leverage that blessing for the sake of the world. It's dangerous, guys, because now we're held responsible for what we do with his glory and his blessings. It's very significant. It's totally different than what we usually hear and think of in our culture, right? It's usually what the prosperity gospel says, which is, hey, God, bless us because we've blessed you, right? Bless us because we've done good things. Bless us because we have enough faith. Bless us because we're somehow special and we don't even know why, but you've told us we are, and so please bless us, right? It's more of a contractual thing. It's quid pro quo. You give me this, I'll give you that. But listen, that's not what it is here. It's God bless us so that we can bless others. That's what it is. That's all. It's that simple. And I want to talk more about the nature of what that blessing is, but let's end the psalm with this declaration in verses 5 through 7. Let the peoples praise you, God. Let all the peoples praise you. All the peoples. Not just me, not just my tribe. All the peoples. The earth has produced its harvest. God, our God, blesses us. God will bless us, and all the ends of the earth will fear him. So let's talk about what the nature of this blessing is here now that we've gone through the whole thing. Is it spiritual? Is it material? Is it something else? Well, the answer is yes. It's D, all of the above. It's all of those things. It's ultimately God's glory, right? It's his presence with us. That's the ultimate blessing, is experiencing his glory in our lives. But man, that plays out in two specific ways here in the psalm. It's through, first, leveraging the truth so that in verse 2, God's ways may be known to all peoples. That's the first thing. But then it's second, leveraging the harvest. That's verse 6, so that what God gives us, we can give away for the sake of others and for the sake of his mission. So first, it's the truth. How can we know God's ways? Well, we're Christians here, and we believe Jesus has come into the world with a purpose. So it's through the gospel. That's how we know the truth about God. So you can write it down this way. The truth is God has blessed us in the gospel. That's the truth. And that's the nature of the blessing in one sense. It's spiritual. We've been given this message that transforms us from the inside out. Colossians 1 says this about Jesus, that he is the perfect image of the invisible God. When you've seen Jesus, you've seen God. That's the truth. And John 1 says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Listen to this. We observed his glory, the glory as the one and only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. See, Jesus is the embodied truth and glory of God because he is God. He's sent by God. He is God himself, and he's enabled us to experience that truth and glory when we put our faith in him. And part of the truth that we see in that gospel isn't just about Jesus, but it's also about us, that we don't deserve that blessing at all. See, the word blessing automatically implies grace. It gives God, he's giving us something that we don't deserve. That's what grace is, right? It's a blessing showing favor upon someone, even when they don't deserve it. They haven't earned it. They haven't done anything. It's just because of the joy of the one who's doing the blessing. That's all it is. It's a gift. Guys, we don't deserve that gift because we haven't earned it. There is nothing that we can do. We've actually rejected it. We've spurned the gift from God. And we try to steal his glory for ourselves. That's what it boils down to. We're glory stealers. We've been blessed by God for his glory. And what we try to do with those blessings is steal it for ourselves. I mean, we all do this when we take credit for something that we've done that's good, for example. We're stealing God's glory if we think it's because of us. He's the one that's given us that blessing. He's the one that's allowed us and enabled us. It's not because of how awesome we are. It's because of how awesome he is. We steal his glory when we twist God's good design in our lives and we try to use his creation for our own pleasure. We're glory stealers. We also steal his glory when we treat other people who bear his image poorly. We say nasty things about him. We treat him with contempt. We treat him in an unjust way. Glory stealers. But we also steal his glory when we keep silent about the things that he's done in our life. Or when we make light of what Jesus has done on our behalf, but by minimizing the sin in our lives, refusing to repent when we know that we've rejected God or we know we've done something wrong. See, none of that deserves blessing. We haven't earned the blessing. None of that deserves blessing. It actually deserves cursing. When we sin against an eternal God, we deserve an eternal punishment. But man, thank God that it didn't stop there. That's not where the truth stops, right? Because the truth is that he blessed us in the gospel anyway. You can write this down. Jesus became the curse for us so that we can gain God's blessing. See how that works? Jesus was blessed and he laid down his blessings. He sacrificed his blessings so that we could have the blessing of God. That's how the gospel works. Galatians 3, Paul wrote this, Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us, because it is written, cursed is everyone who's hung on a tree. The purpose was that the blessing of Abraham would come to the Gentiles by Christ Jesus so that we could receive the promised Spirit through faith. Man, what he's saying is that we don't deserve any of that. We didn't earn any of that. There's no rule that you and I can follow perfectly enough to make ourselves right with God, because we're glory stealers. We'll steal his glory every single time. We deserve to be cursed for that. But Jesus was and is the blessing of God to us. It's mind-boggling. And listen, if you really get that today, then how can you not share it with others? How can you not? We were cursed, but now we're blessed because of him. I mean, there's this underlying rule in our culture today that what you believe is good for you. Like, if we're Christians, what we believe is fine for us. We shouldn't push it on anybody else. We shouldn't share it with anybody. I'm not saying we shouldn't push it on. I mean, we can't force people to believe this. But when people in the culture, and I do this too, you do this too, but when somebody watches an awesome TV show, or when somebody gets a new phone, okay, I got a Pixel 7 this past week, and I've been telling everybody about it. Me and Michael in the office have this little tiff going on. Is it the iPhone, or is it the Pixel that's better? You be the judge, right? I don't want to hear any noise. I don't want to hear anything, okay, because I'm like, man, the Pixel's awesome. And when we find something awesome, what do we naturally want to do about that? It's enhanced my life, so I want to share it with other people, right? I want to say, listen, this is awesome. You ought to go watch this TV show. You ought to buy this product. You ought to do this, do that. Why? Because it's awesome, and it's made my life better. Now I want it to make your life better. I want that for you. And when the culture says, hey, just keep your religion to yourself, what it's telling us to do is be emotionally unhealthy. Remember that from our sermon series a few months ago. It's telling us, hey, suppress the fact that you're happy about this thing and don't share it with anybody else, because we don't want to hear it. Okay, that's very inconsistent. At best, it's emotionally unhealthy. At worst, it's very oppressive. And it's super intolerant. And so we need to call people on that, because we don't ask anybody else in the culture to do that very thing with anything else except for our faith. What we are here to do is leverage that blessing for others. And we can't help but share it with people. It's made our lives awesome. It's blessed us. How can we not bless others with the same thing? That's the truth that's been given to us. That's what God has blessed us with in the gospel. But the second thing to leverage here is our resources. See, the psalmist refers to the harvest here in verse 6, and it's most likely he's referring to the resources that we've been given, specifically the material resources, is what it looks like here across the commentaries I'm reading. So you can write it down in this way. God has blessed us with material wealth. He's given us things. He's given us what we need to accomplish his mission. Just think about Jesus' parable of the talents in the New Testament, if you remember this. The master of the house, he goes away, he's going on a trip, and so he entrusts all of his wealth to three of his servants. To one, he gives 5 talents, to one, he gives 2, and to another, he gives 1. Now, a talent at this time is thought to be just this massive sum of money. It varies depending on who you look at and what historical sources you're looking at, but somewhere between 15 and 20 years worth of wages. This is a large sum of money. Even 1 talent was a huge amount, but to one, he gave 5. To one he gave 2, and to one he gave 1, each according to their own abilities, is what the parable says. And the first one, who got the 5, he immediately set to work, putting that money to work for his master and investing it so that when the master got back, he had doubled the amount. And he made it work. Same with the second. The two talents were doubled by the time the master got back. But what happened with the guy who had the one? He buried it. And he buried it because he was afraid, and he thought his master was a harsh man. It's very interesting that he didn't know the truth about his master. He didn't recognize the truth, and so it led to him misusing the resources. Very interesting. He buried the wealth. Guys, our material wealth in America is just unparalleled in the world. God has blessed us with so many things, so many resources. We have food to eat every day. I mean, good grief, the problem that we have isn't where our food's going to come from usually. It's where are we going to go, right? It's hashtag first world problems. We argue about it. Where do you want to go? I don't know. What do you want? I don't know. That's our reality most of the time. I mean, even the poorest among us have access to the internet, have access to cell phones, have access to public education. I don't want to downplay poverty in the United States, but the people in our nation are very wealthy compared to the rest of the world, where people are starving to death and dying every single day because they don't have resources available to them. Man, we can't bury that blessing here, guys. And I know that in this room, there's a lot of wealth. Just looking around, I mean, even me, okay? And I'm not that wealthy. But we just look, compared to the rest of the world, we have so many resources. How can we bury that? It didn't catch God off guard that we have what we have. It didn't catch him off guard, just like we talked about in Esther. He created us for this moment, in this place, giving us the things that we have so that we can use them for his glory. And he knew that we'd be tempted to bury what we've got. But what we need to see is that he's blessed us to invest what we have back into his mission for multiplication, for his glory. So you can write this down. If we're going to leverage God's blessings for his glory, we have to invest in God's mission. That's what we have to be willing to invest our time, talent, and treasure in. That's the blessings are both spiritual and material. So we have to be willing to invest both of those things. And before you think it's just money that we're talking about here, the way that we say it here is that we have to give our time, talent, and treasure. So the way that you need to invest in God's mission is through your time, talent, and treasure. It's the whole deal. It's all three. It's all of us. In other words, it's holistic. We can't just invest some of what God has blessed us with. Man, if we're going to pray this prayer and ask for God's blessing, and we say that we're living for his glory in this city and across the world, don't got to be willing to give it all. It's all his anyway, right? He's given it to us. How can we not hold it with open hands? Every part of us has to be this way. Some of y'all might wonder why you don't have as much as other people. Maybe you get in that cycle in your mind, well, how come I don't have this or how come I don't have that? Maybe it's because you're the kind of person that buries what you've got. I don't know if you've ever considered it like that before, but why would God bless you with more if you're not using what you have for his glory? You need to learn to invest your time, talent, and treasure so that God will be glorified through you. And investing your time might be one of the hardest things right now. I mean, I think one thing COVID taught all of us was that we probably don't prioritize God's mission the way that we should. I think that's one thing that it probably pointed out to us. We don't spend time with people sharing the gospel very often. You know, we don't leave margin in our lives to make sure that we can serve others in need. We don't get involved in Christian community like we know we ought to be to help ourselves and to help others. But the same is really true of our talents, too. I mean, it's hard to give up a Sunday morning sometimes to serve when you've been doing that same thing all week long, but you've gotten paid for it. I mean, it's really hard to give up that payment so that you can just serve for God's glory. Or maybe the hardest thing is giving your treasure, because this is the one that most people have a problem with. And listen, I want to be candid. I am going to ask you to invest your treasure here in the mission with us. I'm going to do that. All those lanes that we want to run in next year, they cost money, don't they? But I want you to hear me on this if that's where you're at. If that makes you uncomfortable, or you just think I'm after your money, okay, A, I do drive a Honda Civic that's 1999 Honda Civic, okay? So just keep in mind, I hope I can get a new car in the future, but right now, that's what I'm driving. So listen, I'm not trying to take your money, I promise. If I were doing that, I'd be in a different line of work. Okay, or we'd be preaching the prosperity gospel or some crazy thing like that. I'm not after your money, but B, and I do mean this with all seriousness, let me give you permission to give somewhere else. And I really mean that. Because what I think is probably happening is your unwillingness to give the money for the sake of the mission is a heart issue between you and God, not between you and me. It's between you and God. If you're not willing to give It means you got to keep control. It means you think that you can control your own life. You think that those blessings are for you. Listen, I know many churches and leaders in the church have abused this. I totally understand that. But Jesus talks about money more than anything else in the New Testament. And I think he does that because where we spend our money shows what we're really after in our heart, right? What do we really want in this life? It really does, man. It shows that. What do you really love? Are you after God's glory? Are you after your own? Man, it's really that simple. In a few weeks, we'll talk more about giving our treasure in detail and what that looks like according to the Bible. The Bible has a lot to say about it. But what I want to do today is call you to consider how you're using all three of those areas of your life, time, talent, and treasure. Are you leveraging them for God's glory, or are you burying them for your own? You see? Because listen, there's two ways to change. If you start to see and you want to make sure that you're leveraging God's blessings, not for yourself, but for Him, the first thing you can do if you want to change is learn to worship God with your whole heart. That's the first thing. It's a worship issue for you. See, what the entire psalm is about is bringing people in to worship the King who's worthy to be worshiped. What we'll be studying together in depth in January is this concept of loving God completely. We want to start our new year off by talking about that with one another. What does it look like to live for God's glory? What does it look like to love Him wholeheartedly and to worship Him deeply? Man, how can you cause the nations to praise God if you yourself aren't praising Him with your whole heart? You see how that works? And this is the God who hung the stars in the sky and set the world on its axis and separated the dry land from the oceans and created every single molecule and holds it together by the word of His power right now. But He's also the God who blessed you with the gospel and gave you the resources that you have. He deserves your worship, right? He deserves all of you. If you've been reflecting on your life and you see that you haven't been an active part of His mission right now, it might be an evangelism problem for you. Maybe you don't know what to say. Maybe you're scared. Maybe you don't understand. Maybe you don't have enough training. That's fair. It may be that you don't have the resources to give away. Maybe it's a resource issue for you. Maybe it's a resource problem. You don't feel like you can give away enough. But I have a feeling it's much more of a worship problem for you, if that's the case. Because we're called to give away whatever we have, no matter how much it is. If we don't worship God wholeheartedly, no matter how much training or money you throw at the mission, it's not worth anything for you because you're burying that glory. But the second thing you can do here to change is not just worship wholeheartedly, but it's also take a step toward obedience. Take the step, not out of compulsion, but out of the overflow of the worship of your heart. You see? The worship leads to obedience. You just want to take the step. If you really do want to experience God's glory, but you're struggling, sometimes you just got to do it and let your heart follow. And you know what? That's not called disingenuousness. That's called discipline. That's what we do with anything else in our life that we want for ourselves. We know that we ought to be healthy. We know we ought to eat healthy. We know we ought to work out and try to do those things. So we discipline our bodies. Some of us, most of us ought to, right? We should discipline ourselves to do that for the sake of a healthy, blessed life. Man, if we're going to do that with temporary things like our body and our health, why wouldn't we do that with eternal things that are going to last forever? Why wouldn't we start sowing those seeds now? Of course, we need to discipline ourselves. Don't use that as an excuse. Get out of that mindset. You know you should do it, so just do it. Worship God. He deserves it. And then take the step of obedience. Start giving your time, talent, and treasure today. You can do that here at our church by coming to Starting Point. Go to On Ramp. The next one's in December. It's coming up in a few weeks. You can see how you can do that here at Redemption Church. But also, what I want you to do is take out this commitment card here. And I want you to look at this commitment card, and I want you to pray over this. And I want you to take a step of obedience with us this December. How much should you give this December? Well, here's what I want to do in asking you all to participate in this mission with us. I want to ask that everyone would consider doubling their giving in December. Now, listen, if you're not giving right now, then you need to take the step of starting to give something. Because everybody can give something, no matter what kind of resources you have. And listen, if that bothers you, give it somewhere else. If you think that I just want your money, give it somewhere else, because this is a heart issue for you. Do you trust God with the blessings He's given you? You need to be giving your money away somewhere. But for those of us who call Redemption Church our home, and are invested in the mission together here, I'm calling you to give double. My family and I are going to do that. It's going to be hard. I promise you that. It's going to be a challenge for us to do that. The elders of this church are going to do that. The leaders of this church. We're going to all bring back this commitment card on Sunday, December 11th for our commitment Sunday. And we're going to come up and we're going to place them symbolically up here together saying, we commit to give. Now, whatever that amount is for you, it doesn't matter. If it's double, that's the thing that you should write down. But I want you to take that card home and pray over it. Pray for wisdom. Pray for a heart that desires what God desires, which is to see all peoples praising Him. Let's do this together. And you know what? That's not a huge ask in the sense that we did this last year, guys. We did this exact thing. We asked that you would double your giving in December last year. And you know what? We did. We averaged about $15,000 a month income as far as giving goes. And so we said, let's double that. And you know how much we brought in for the month of December? Just over $30,000. We doubled. I know, that's awesome, isn't it? That is so awesome. And we said that we'd give that extra $15,000 that we raised completely away for the sake of the mission. It wasn't going to stay here at all, symbolically, so that you would know that we're about the mission here. We're not about ourselves and building ourselves up. We're about our city and we're about the world. And so we didn't just give $15,000 away. Yeah, we raised $15,000, but we gave a little bit more than that. We actually gave double that away this year in 2022. We gave over $30,000 away from this church for the sake of the mission to local organizations here in our city, to church planting across our nation and across the world, and to international missions. That's awesome, guys. We gave double what we said we would give away. That's incredible. We want to live with open hands here at our church. It's all because our church answered God's call to invest the blessings that we've received back into His mission, that we've gotten to participate in that. That is so awesome. For a few of you this December, though, you need to do more than double your giving. You need to give above and beyond that because God has blessed you in a way that you're able to do that. Giving double wouldn't be a sacrifice for you. Maybe you need to give more. I don't know what that looks like for you, but I want to give you this goal to help you understand what we're going to raise together. We want to raise $60,000 this December. Now listen, that's a little bit of a stretch because we're bringing in on average about $22,000. That's very generous for a church of our size. I promise you, that's awesome. So to double that would be what? $44,000, $45,000. We want to raise $60,000. And the reason that we want to raise $60,000 is because we really believe that these ministry lanes that we have laid out to you will get us to a place of multiplication. That's effectiveness in the mission together. We want to fuel our next gen ministries. We want to create that sending pipeline with the residency. We got to move out of this building. Okay, we got to somehow, some way. Okay. Now, if you have questions about what we do with the money, what our budget looks like, man, how we'll spend the money, come ask us. Come ask me or Michael. We'd be happy to share that with you. We are completely open with that. We want to be above reproach in how we're spending the resources that God has given us through your generosity. So don't hesitate to ask. But I really believe that God wants to do this in the life of our church because He wants to use our church in the mission in a big way. Can't you imagine the day when our kids and students' ministries are so healthy and so on fire that they're the number one ministry for seeing people baptized in our church? Can you imagine that day? If our student ministry is the vehicle for sending and making disciples in our church, that would be incredible. I mean, we have a group of like four or five people meeting in there, you know, once a month right now. Can you imagine the day when that will be the sending lane of our church? Can you imagine the day when we can send out more people than we brought with us on the church planting team to Roanoke? We brought 21 people here. I am looking forward to the day when we send out the 22nd person for the sake of church planting or missions here at our church. We can do that through a residency program. But can you imagine the day that we meet in a building that doesn't hinder the mission but enhances it, right? It's not just a hindrance that we have to work around. It's something that enhances. Buildings are just tools. But man, some tools are better than others, right? So we want to make sure that we look forward to that. Can't you just imagine that day for us as a church? But can't you just imagine the day when you're in heaven and you meet somebody who is saved through the ministries of Redemption Church because of your willingness to give generously of your time, your talent, and your treasure? Can't you imagine that day? Man, people are the mission. And listen, we were Jesus' mission. He was sent for us. He was willing to give up his blessings so that we could be blessed. He leveraged everything to bring us into glory with himself. And now he wants us to leverage everything that we have to bring others into his glory with us. In the Old Testament, Haggai was a prophet after Israel's exile period. And his job was to call out the people who were living in luxury back in Jerusalem. They had all gone back. People were trying to rebuild the city, rebuild the temple. And the people there had gotten apathetic. And they'd taken all of the resources that they'd been given by the empire of Persia. And they said, you know what, we're just going to... We don't think now's the time to rebuild the temple. What Haggai does is he goes back in there and he says, no, you should be rebuilding the temple. What is going on? And through Haggai, God says to the people, why do you think your fields aren't producing what you want? Why do you feel like you never have quite enough to eat or to be satisfied? Why do your clothes never quite keep you warm enough? Why do you never seem to have enough money in your pockets? It's because you're thinking of yourselves more than God. You're burying the blessings. The reason they weren't able to produce anything or be satisfied was because they had been hoarding God's blessings for themselves. But Haggai said, if you would just return in worship toward God and step out in obedience to build his temple, here's the promise. The final glory of this house will be greater than the first. I will provide peace in this place. This is the declaration of the Lord of armies. Man, the original temple, if you recall, had God's glory and his presence very real there. I mean, he was there in smoke and splendor and light and all of these, and thunder. And he says that the second temple will be greater than the first. Well, we know that the second temple was Jesus. And that temple was torn down, and 3 days later it was rebuilt for our sake. And now we get to be a part of the temple with him. We're the place where God's glory dwells now. How can we not share that with others? Might be because we're not filled with that glory. We have to really ask ourselves that question. Is your time more valuable to you than someone else's eternity? Are your talents more valuable to you than serving others for the sake of God's mission? Are you spending your money on yourself for your own glory rather than God's? Listen, we have got to learn to leverage everything that God has given us, both spiritual and physical, material, wealth-wise, so that the nations will praise God forever, because he's worthy to be praised here in Roanoke and across the world. And listen, I'm not going to end like I normally do. What I want to do is call your attention here to a story from one of our leaders here, a leadership family that we have here at Redemption Church. This is why they invest in the mission here in Roanoke with us. It's not to say, look at them and how awesome they are. It's really to lift up God and how awesome he is. And so I want you to turn